Hey everyone, this is Xenia Montan and welcome to another episode of People of Marketing podcast. I'm the founder and CEO of Planable, the collaboration tool for social teams, and I launched this podcast to take a sneak peek into the lives of top marketers. Every week, we explore the story of their careers, the choices, mistakes, wins, and imperfections of their work life. My guest today is David Bolton. He's the digital marketing manager at Dock and Bay. He started his marketing career in digital marketing in a small agency at 21 years old. Having worked his way up the agency ladder and moving into the world of contracting, he has worked for every size business from five-man craft beer retailers to multi-billion dollar corporate fashion giants. Now specializing in digital growth in new and overseas markets, he has become the jack of all trades in digital marketing and digital startup, corporate, SMB, freelance, contracting, consultancy. He has worn every hat. David, thank you so much for joining us today on People of Marketing podcast.
No problem. Good to be here.
Awesome. So the best way to just kickstart this conversation is by walking a bit through your career. And we've already, you know, given the audience a quick summary on your experience so far. But it would be great if we could start with the early beginning of your career. And my first question would be, what would you say was your first interaction with marketing and what got you into marketing in the first place?
Yeah, so actually started just before I joined an agency at 21. I, like a lot of graduates at the time, I found it difficult to find work coming straight out of university. And I actually started an online Shopify store.
Oh.
Selling ties and bow ties and things like that. I don't know why they were particular products that I was into, but I started sourcing from around the world. But I suddenly realized I built a website and no one was coming to it. So my first Google was, you know, how do you bring people to your website? And up come at the time Google AdWords. And that was really sort of my very, very first foray into digital marketing.
Yeah. And you definitely have a passion both in the marketing space, but also in the fashion space. Tell us a bit about the second.
Fashion wise, yeah. So originally I kind of fell into fashion. My sort of early agency was finance led. But the first contract I took up afterwards was a fashion tech startup who sort of opened my eyes to the world of fashion and sort of online retailing. And then from there, I kind of picked up a lot of work within the fashion industry. Once you sort of work for one or two names, it kind of snowballs into different fashion retailers. So I wouldn't say I kind of wanted to. I kind of fell into it and sort of developed this skill set around, you know, fashion and digital marketing growth in those businesses.
So is that like a personal passion of yours that you also have on the side? Or is it just like a super interesting industry to market into?
I wouldn't say it was a passion, you know, I've always been conscious about my style and things like that. But no, it was more just an industry, you know, one company that I worked for was it happened to be in fashion. And then, like I said, it snowballed into two, three, and four. And, you know, I spent probably around, you know, 5 years now working in the fashion industry and digital marketing. So, it wouldn't say it was a passion, but I think it's one of those things where in a career where you find yourself doing well at it. So you you tend to sort of stick with what you know, so to speak.
And in the agency world, when you were in the agency space, you've worked, you know, for clients and other industries, right? So you're familiar with doing marketing for different industries than the fashion one. And I'm curious, how do you think, you know, marketing in fashion compares with, you know, marketing in everything else? What are some of the specifics, like shine a bit of light for people that are not familiar with fashion marketing?
Yeah, all the fashion companies tend to have the same metrics that they work to and are very similar, you know, things like AOV, You know, they have their core products that always do well each year. So they're products that they tend to sell, you know, every single season. And then they'll have their products that they will sort of come in and out on trends and things like that in different seasons. And that will change. You know, everyone's heard of the spring, summer, autumn, winter side of things.
Right.
But when you're outside of fashion, people don't have that. They tend to have, you know, the few products that sell, but generally there's not a trend, a core and a trend that tend to have slightly different models.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the fashion industry, you tend, everyone I've worked with tend to have those core or hero products and then the trends on the side.
Right. And in terms of like skill set, have you noticed anything different that you have, you know, to possess as a skill in order to be good at you know, fashion marketing?
That's a good question. Not really. I think the digital marketing skill set is quite transferable. It's a skill set that once you know the technical side of things, I think the experience of working on different accounts then makes it very transferable. There's nothing in particular about fashion. You know, I guess you look at different reports differently. You know, you look at products, particularly companies who have, you know, large volumes of SKUs and stock keeping units. So, you know, if you might be, you know, advertising for a, you know, do digital marketing for a company who might have five products in financial services, whatever it might be. But fashion, you might have, you know, a data feed of 6,000 products.
Right.
So as a digital marketer, you need to understand that you're not just marketing a few products or one product, you're marketing, you know, thousands, and how you go through those data feeds and understand what products are the best sellers, what have the highest margin and things like that. I guess in a way it's slightly different, but I think the skill set itself is quite transferable.
Yeah. I'm super curious if outside of fashion, if there is any industry or, you know, companies that you follow for inspiration.
Yeah, I guess in terms of inspiration, it's like different. They're more lifestyle companies that I like. For example, you know, I like Peloton over the last sort of year and a half have marketed their business. You know, you can always talk about companies like Nike, for example,
right.
And they sort of lean on their athletes and the way they do their branding. I guess it's more lifestyle rather than, you know, companies that I would follow, for example.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So let's go back a bit to the early beginning of your career. And, you know, when you're very, you know, just at the start of your career, I've talked to so many professionals in the marketing space, and most of them have had someone they were admiring, either, you know, a very close role model, some really cool boss that they had, or just someone that they were not connected with, but they were, you know, following for inspiration and for motivation. And I'm curious if you had anyone like that, like if you had any role models that helped you out in the beginning, or if you're following anyone.
Yeah, it's a good question. I guess for me, I've never been someone who's followed anyone in the digital marketing industry.
Yeah.
You know, you hear names that, you know, are thrown around in events and things like that, but I've never been someone to sort of, you know, follow someone within that digital marketing industry. But I guess you can, I guess people will see people on YouTube, for example. You know, Gary Vaynerchuk is a role that a lot of people follow.
Right.
And just even people, you know, I said it's very wider than digital marketing, but, you know, people like The Rock, for example, and the way he goes about his business. And, you know, people in life that you sort of pick up on Instagram and YouTube and you follow them and, you know, the influence that they have on sort of their daily routines and things like that. Whether I believe their daily routine is like that inside out, but you know, I guess in the industry, not really. It's been more of a, what is the industry saying, you know, and what companies or agencies might be talking about on blogs and things like that. But not, I wouldn't say, I couldn't put my finger on anyone in any sort of industry per se.
Got it. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Something else that I wanted to ask you is around, you know, the journey of our careers. So a question that I really love asking people is, You know, we've all had this seemingly insignificant events, or at least they seemed insignificant at that point in time, that actually went on and changed our lives. And I'm curious if you had any events like that in your journey.
Yeah, so I've had a few significant events, but thinking about insignificant, yeah. I guess everybody in their career will have insignificant events like this. But for me, it's just meeting people. Mm. I was young in the agency, and I was lucky enough to, you know, travel to all places and meet all different people in the industry. And I guess just picking up people's business cards and you know, shaking their hands or sitting next to them at events, at the time, you know, they seem insignificant. But I remember meeting someone at an event when I was 23, and, you know, 4 years old, you know, later when I was 27, we needed a new display partner. And, you know, you pick up, well, I guess I didn't find the business card, I found them on LinkedIn. But, you know, it's things like that you don't actually realize it's happening at the time. But I guess when you sit next to people and you suddenly have a small conversation, or, you know, the awkward 5-10 minutes before events start, and they sort of invite you into breakfast meetings, and, you know, everyone sort of mingles and gets to know each other. And it's things like that you don't think about, but particularly in industry digital marketing, where everyone's quite well connected anyway.
Yeah.
It's vital to have those connections. But I think those for me are the insignificant things that actually over time sort of develop into significant things.
Yeah, small things that, you know, tend to add up into something bigger. I love that. I want to talk a bit more about how you got started in your career and what were the steps that got you where you are today. You started mostly your career in the agency space. And I'm curious, you know, why did you make the move into, you know, working directly on the client side? Why did you make the switch? You know, walk us through the logic back then.
Yeah, so originally when I was 21, I think I sent out around, I think the number was 531 applications as a graduate and got nowhere. And it's a funny story, because I remember sitting in my room thinking, I'm getting nowhere. You know, I've had so many rejection letters. And someone completely out of the blue, a recruiter online, sort of rung me up and said, you know, we realize you're a graduate in computer science. We have a sort of a local digital marketing agency that is looking for sort of trained graduates. And within, I think it was about within 48 hours, 2 days, I had a job at this sort of local agency. So it was I wasn't particularly applying all the time for digital marketing agencies, but I was applying for digital marketing roles. Yeah. I kind of fell into the agency side of things, but, you know, being a local agency, they're very small. I guess like a lot of agencies, when they hire graduates, they sort of train them up their way and what they used to do and the best practices that they do. But, you know, having a computer science and business management degree, I immediately felt like this was pretty close to what my skill set is. And I sort of rose through the ranks at the small agency pretty quickly, you know, going on to management the team in 2.5 years. But I think that having that opportunity when I was young, I think I was 24 when I was a manager with 7 reports. So having that opportunity when I was young was really quite key. And I guess from there, you know, things happen where it was a local agency. The agency was being sold, and I felt like my career was going to be further into London, for example.
Yeah.
And I left into the world of contracting. And that kind of completely changed the way I looked at the industry. You know, I'd been in this sort of comfort blanket and this bubble of financial services for the last sort of 3 years. But contracting freelancing was incredibly tough. But I would do it over and over again. You know, you meet so many different people and so many different business models. No one has the same problem. You know, everyone has different problems and they're all thinking of different solutions. They all have different, you know, budgets and financial models that they work to. And I think doing that and sort of going into that world, again, reasonably young, you soak it all up. You know, you're not hardened your brain into thinking there's only one way of doing things. Originally I was sort of a paid search specialist and still am in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I started freelancing and contracting that I picked up, you know, Facebook marketing and affiliate marketing and display marketing and things like that. So not only am I sort of broadening my business sense, I guess you could say, also the technical side of things. And I guess that from there sort of, you know, followed on into client side as a full-time role. There are a lot of benefits to it. There are a lot of negatives to it. But I think it's a question all recruiters ask you. You know, they always say, are you happy going client side? Do you want to go in-house? Yeah. And a lot of digital marketers have that choice. You know, the amount of recruiters that I've spoken to whose pretty much first question is that is quite comical, but it's all very preference led. I've always found client side more fun, mm-hmm. in the sense that you are a little bit more in control and you're a little bit more, I won't say passionate, but you can control people's businesses and help them grow more from in-house. But then in-house you have a plethora of issues from management to budgeting, things like that. So it's pros and cons.
Right. What's one thing that you didn't expect about freelancing that you discovered, you know, while you were doing it?
I guess I struggled a lot with finding work.
Yeah.
So I was...
That's the huge, you know, struggle. That's the biggest struggle, right, of freelancing mostly.
Yeah. I think I did it when I started when I was 20 or just turning 25. Mm. You know, I didn't have the CV. You know, a lot of companies say this person's not ready to freelance. And when you picked up jobs, they wouldn't pay you a lot of money. You know, they'd say you're just a 24-year-old or 25-year-old. You know, we don't expect you to have this rate or hourly rate or whatever it might be.
That's but so funny, the money age cap. I've been there back in my agency life that I had before. I was running a small agency and I remember it was very similar with your freelancing experience. You know, people expect you to make a certain amount of money at a certain amount, you know, at a certain age. And if you make more, that's not okay.
Yeah, no, it's totally true. I mean, I remember negotiating rates that were less than what I was on before. And, you know, I'd have clients, you know, pay me minimal money and then expect me to work evenings and things like that. So I think it's that constant battle with, you know, the work-life balance that you get with freelancing.
Yeah.
With, you know, is it worth it, the money that's coming in? You know, a lot of people do make money contracting. It's a very good rate sometimes. But I think back then when I was 24, 25, I think the chips were against me and, you know, not having that CV that I do have today, it was quite difficult sometimes.
Right. Got it. So next up, I want to talk a bit about the recent period of time, the strange days that we're going through right now. What was the most uplifting and potentially unexpected part of the lockdown for you?
I think it's the work-life balance.
Yeah.
You know, some people in the news, you hear about it, you know, they're sort of working more. But for me, being able to get up early and not having that 1 hour commute into the City of London, you know, gives you an hour back in the mornings that you can work through and sort of you finish your work for the day sooner.
Yeah.
And having that life balance.
Yeah. Something interesting that you mentioned earlier about the work-life balance, that was the, you know, the kind of the benefit that you enjoyed the most out of this unfortunate situation that we're going through. And it's interesting that that's the one that you mentioned. You know, I've seen the other part where a lot of people, you know, complain about the lack of work-life balance now that they're working from home and the lines are so much more, you know, blur. So I'm curious, you know, how did you manage to separate it? How did you manage to make it work?
I guess in a way that I'm lucky that, you know, I live with my parents still, and I haven't got any distractions. You know, I am lucky enough to, you know, get up when I want, open my laptop, no distractions, do the work. So I can sort of totally understand people who might have distractions such as kids or dependents and things like that. So I've been lucky in that sense, but I think it's, you know, being able to get up, work out, you know, go and play golf and come back and still be able to do 4, 5, 6 hours worth of work.
Right.
I think it's a fantastic balance to have. And it's raised my productivity. You know, it has. You know, I'm happy with what I do on the work. So for me, it's particularly worked well, but I totally get it. You know, I totally understand that it can be difficult for a lot of people.
Right. My last question before we move on to the rapid fire session. My last question is a very controversial one, but I really love asking it. This industry that we're working in is, you know, an industry that changes so often, and there's so many trends and so many new buzzwords every single week. And you know, my question is, what's one belief or buzzword trending today that is really annoying you or that you think is massively overrated?
Yeah, I've heard a few.
A few, you have a list.
I mean, a few years ago, everyone at Google spoke about Mobilegeddon, and it was when mobile traffic overtook, you know, desktop for the first time, whatever it was. And they had I think it went on for about 2 years, that, you know, Mobilegeddon, and every event was about that. And it sort of moved on to attribution modeling. And I still don't think everyone still understands what attribution modeling is or how to actually effectively implement attribution. You know, a lot of fashion companies that I've worked are still sort of last click, just because it's easy for the finance team to work out budgets and things like that and forecasting. You know, you often hear the word omnichannel. Omnichannel is, I guess, it's not a buzzword, but it's something that you hear a lot in businesses now, that there's still those, like you said, blurred lines and grey lines between. But I think companies are starting to understand a little bit more, you know, how does digital spend affect footfall at retail stores, falls under that. And that's sort of been a big push of Google's recently as well. And Facebook do some stuff with it as well now. But I guess over the last few months, I think the word incrementality, something that really gets me. I think my director heard it once at a conference, and all of a sudden they decided to use it 100 million times. you know, is how do you know that the marketing spend you're doing incremental? And, you know, we've challenged people that we work with, particularly display partners, you know, is the spend that we're spending actually incremental? And we run, you know, plenty of incrementality tests with partners that have come back inconclusive, because no one, you know, everyone's talking about it, but no one, again, is 100% sure how to measure it. And I guess that's the industry, isn't it? It's very difficult to measure things in, you know, from all the way from the top to the bottom. So,
yeah.
Four words that I've heard over the last few years that have got me.
Yeah, it's very interesting what you just mentioned, you know, that we're such a data-driven industry, but at the same time, it's just terrifying how many things we can't measure.
Yeah.
Direct traffic for us is the worst. That's my struggle. That's the hardest one.
It's funny because you always, you see, you know, Google Analytics or Adobe Analytics, you go in and you've got, you know, millions of KPIs and metrics and dimensions you have to put tables together with. And, you know, as marketers, we kind of know, but it's explaining that to finance and understanding that it's okay to lose money on Facebook because that helps us make money on paid search. And, you know, it's things like that, but the measurement side of things. But, it's not ideal, but
it is what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I want to move forward with our rapid fire session. So I have four quick questions for you. Quick questions, quick answers. Are you ready to start with the first?
I am indeed. Go for it.
Yes. So if you wouldn't be doing what you're doing today, what else would you do?
I'd most likely be selling online in some capacity. I don't know what. But
like e-commerce, like running an e-commerce business or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's cool. What's your favorite app or tool that you use at work?
Google Sheets. I pretty much run my life on Google Sheets, personal and business as well. So
that makes sense. I love a good list. Worst advice you've ever received?
I'll have to say my dad's favorite saying. He says, just get a job in insurance. It's recession proof. It's safe. It's going to be there for the entire career. So.
Oh, I love that. And my last question is, what's your favorite social media network or the one where you spend most of your time?
Yeah, I get lost in YouTube. You know, it's the only place where.
I love YouTube. You're the first one to mention YouTube. That's.
I know. The thing is, I go from, you know, watching sports highlights to, you know, now there's a guy that's doing, you know, book reviews, and he sort of condenses books into 10 minutes, you know, sections of videos on YouTube, and it's, you know, you can sit there for an hour and learn everything you need to know about six different books, and it's incredible network.
That's amazing. I spend my mornings on YouTube. That's, you know, just what I do. I don't usually, you know, spend a lot of time on YouTube, you know, in the rest, you know, of my day, but mornings, a few Vox videos. That's how I run. This was such a great conversation. Dave, thank you so much for, you know, just taking the time to share your story. I really enjoyed chatting with you. Thank you again for doing this.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
And for everyone else listening in, thanks so much for joining. And I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed chatting with Dave. And don't forget, we have a new episode every Wednesday. Subscribe to People of Marketing on your favorite podcast app. And till next time.